My co-presenters, I would like to thank all of you for hanging in with us to the very end of the day. I know for some of you it's been a long day. And I'd also like to acknowledge my colleagues on the slide, particularly Dr. Dylan Hahn, who's here in the audience. The only disclosure that I have to make is that two of my colleagues are involved with our new Clinical and Translational Science Center. So the purpose of our study was to look at the association between smoke-free laws, home smoking policies, exposure to secondhand smoke, and support for smoke-free policy. I really like background. I see that I have a lot of background slides, but just as a little bit of background about secondhand smoke, and some of you may already know this, secondhand smoke is the third leading preventable cause of death in the United States, and it actually kills about 50,000 people every year in our country. You probably know what secondhand smoke is. It's a mixture of the smoke given off by the burning end of a cigarette, pipe, or cigar, and the smoke that's exhaled by smokers. In 2006, the Surgeon General released a new major report on involuntary exposure to secondhand smoke and concluded at that time that it causes disease and death in children and non-smoking adults. And at that time, the report stated that the home was becoming the predominant location for exposure of children and adults to secondhand smoke, but now we know that the home is the principal source of exposure to secondhand smoke. A little background about smoke-free policies. We know that smoke-free policies are very effective public health interventions to reduce public exposure to secondhand smoke because this is documented through research. But we're not quite as sure about the effects of smoke-free policies on secondhand smoke exposure in the home and home smoking restrictions because the evidence found in the literature is not consistent. Therefore, we thought it was really important to conduct research in this area. A little bit more about the Surgeon General's report, and some of this you may already know. In children, secondhand smoke or involuntary exposure to tobacco smoke increases their risk for sudden infant death syndrome, for acute respiratory infections, for ear problems, and for more severe asthma. They also have more respiratory symptoms, and their lung growth is slowed if their parents smoke. For adults, there are immediate adverse effects on the cardiovascular system. You've heard a little bit about that already, and I'll talk about that just a little bit more. Adults are also at increased risk for coronary heart disease and lung cancer. Millions of Americans are still exposed to tobacco smoke in their homes and workplaces, and we know that the only way to fully protect non-smokers is to eliminate the source or to eliminate smoking in indoor spaces. We know that smoke-free laws improve public health. They create healthy places for workers and for patrons to breathe clean air. They reduce health care costs. We have documentation of that, good evidence of that. And smoke-free laws are a known public health solution. Research shows that after strong or comprehensive smoke-free laws go into effect, on average, communities experience a 17% drop in heart attacks, and these benefits grow over time, later research has shown. In terms of asthma, emergency department visits for asthma were assessed before and after implementation of a comprehensive smoke-free law where we live in Lexington, Fayette County, Kentucky. And implementation of the law was actually associated with fewer emergency department visits for asthma among both children and adults, with a more significant decline among adults. Our study didn't establish causation, but we do know that secondhand smoke increases the risk for development and increasing severity of asthma among adults and children, and we know that reducing exposure to secondhand smoke decreases symptomatic exacerbations among those who have asthma. This is a slide that's related to that same comprehensive law that was passed in Lexington, Fayette County, Kentucky. That legislation also resulted in decreased adult smoking prevalence and substantial cost savings. Fayette County adult smoking rates actually dropped 32% after the smoke-free law was implemented, and that was compared to other counties in Kentucky with similar demographics but no smoke-free law, and there was no change in the control counties over time. So that's a lot of background, but it leads us to the reason for our study, and our hypotheses were that residents living in communities with comprehensive smoke-free laws will report less exposure to secondhand smoke and more support for the laws compared to those who lived in communities with weak or no smoke-free laws. And also, we hypothesized that there would be an association between smoke-free laws, smoking prevalence, and home smoking. excuse me, a quick look at our design and sample. We had a longitudinal trend study with cross-sectional surveys that were conducted annually over 6 years. The samples were made up of Kentucky residents who completed online surveys through the eRewards consumer panel. And that panel is actually a marketing research firm that provides survey data to our umbrella organization, which is UK Healthcare. Almost 2,500 participants completed the surveys, and they were online surveys from 2005 to 2010. The measures we were interested in were secondhand smoke policies at home and at work, the hours that people were exposed to secondhand smoke within the past week, support for smoke-free policies, and that was done on a four-point ordinal scale, which ranged from strongly support to strongly opposed. And then we looked at demographics, including the county of residence and the current smoking status. This is just an overview of what our state looks like in terms of strength of smoke-free laws and regulations. We do live in Kentucky. We are in the heart of tobacco company. There's a lot of tobacco stuff that goes on in our state, some good and some not so good. And this slide just shows you the different communities that have smoke-free laws. As of October this year, a little more than 33% of Kentuckians were covered by comprehensive smoke-free workplace laws or regulations. Our College of Nursing, and Ellen in particular, has been very actively involved in supporting these communities to go smoke-free. Our sample characteristics was predominantly female. Little over half were aged 45 and above. 80% had at least some college education, 68% were married, and 92% had medical insurance. This is not a typical picture of our state, I can tell you that. This sample was relatively well-educated with moderately high socioeconomic status, which has some implications for this study. In terms of results, this is what we found. 78% of the survey participants had a smoke-free home. 81% of those who worked outside the home had also had a smoke-free workplace, and the average number of hours exposed to other people's smoke in the past week was just a little over 11.2. You can see that 57%, or the majority, strongly supported smoke-free laws, with only about 13% who strongly opposed. Further survey findings showed that if we controlled for county-level smoking rate, the ones who lived in counties with comprehensive laws or laws that covered everything in the county, all public places, were exposed to fewer hours of secondhand smoke in the past week than those in counties with moderate or weak laws or those in counties with no smoke-free laws. And support for smoke-free policies was highest in counties with comprehensive laws, followed by moderate or weak laws and no laws. Our preliminary analysis showed that this was an overall effect for both outcomes among the levels of the law status, but the overall effect significance was driven by the difference between comprehensive and no law. The moderate weak group was not really different in either outcome from either of the other two law status groups. We also found that there was no difference in the prevalence of smoke-free homes between those living in counties with smoke-free laws and those without smoke-free laws, and there was no difference in prevalence of smoking between those living in counties with smoke-free laws and those without smoke-free laws. So the takeaway, it really is that strength of smoke-free law is really associated with people being protected from secondhand smoke. So the stronger the law, the comprehensive laws, the more residents are protected from secondhand smoke, which makes sense. And that residents in smoke-free counties, at least in this study, were more supportive of smoke-free laws, even though the smoking rate didn't differ between the smoke-free counties and the, those that were not smoke-free. And these findings, we think, really underscore the public health protections that are afforded to people by smoke-free laws. So, in conclusion, we all, as public health advocates, need to advocate for comprehensive smoke-free laws and policies. Good is not enough. A law with just a few loopholes is really not good enough. It needs to be a strong, comprehensive smoke-free law. And our policymakers need to know that smoke-free laws are popular with their constituents, not just us, but the public as well. And when smoke-free laws are implemented, at least in this study, people did not smoke more in the home. Recommendations for what we need to do in the future. We need to replicate the study with disparate population subgroups, and I'll tell you a little bit more about why we think that's the case. And we need to test population-based and policy interventions to educate the public and to educate policymakers at the local, state, and national levels on adopting smoke-free homes and enacting comprehensive smoke-free ordinances. And just as a side, the reason that we would really like to replicate this with disparate population subgroups is that we did a study in five rural distressed counties. One had a smoke-free public places law, but it was not comprehensive. And we found that people were less exposed to secondhand smoke in the smoke-free county, but those in that county were more likely to smoke at home than those in the county without smoke-free laws. So what that leads us to believe is that in distressed counties or poor counties or lower socioeconomic groups, we may need more resources to promote evidence-based tobacco control to quit smoking and to reduce home smoking when smoke-free laws are enacted. Questions? Thank you.
Questions for any of the other speakers? We didn't have time for Napoli to. Anybody has? I actually have, it's more of a comment. In looking at the data for one of our counties where we've had a tobacco program for 10 years, although it started out as one person. And I don't know whether it's the base realignment or if it's the returning soldiers from Afghanistan and Iraq, but their prevalence just really dropped in a county where there's an army base that's not a large county, but it's not a tiny county. Jumped like, if I remember correctly, it's jumped like 6 percentage points in just about 3 years. And so we attribute that actually to the base, to the soldiers, rather than anything else that's happened in the county, because there has been. And so you might want to look at what's the effect of those base realignments as the soldiers move from one place to another, because my guess is you're going to find a pretty strong effect on those communities. So I'd like to thank our speakers, particularly for staying on time. I would like to thank you for staying in to the end. And have a good rest of the APHA and good flights home.